The sermon that we have this evening is, I call it a Jewish Christmas. And some of you may be like, a Jewish Christmas? Like, isn't Christmas Jewish? Jesus was a Jew, and so you may be thinking on that hand. Maybe you're thinking on the other hand, like, what, are we having Hanukkah now? What are you talking about, a Jewish Christmas? But what I'd like to do this evening, in short, is I'd like to look at the Jewish culture. And I'd like to look at the story of Jesus being born and really examine that through the eyes of the culture of first century Jews. As we know, Caesar Augustus called for a census and everyone was returning to their homeland. It'd be like me returning to Clifton Park, New York. I'm from New York. Don't fault me. All right, don't fault me. That's a long trek, right? And so when we go and make that long trek, we're staying with who? We're staying with family, right? We're staying with family. Unlike our culture that likes to stay at a lot of Holiday Inns, we would stay with family. And so Mark Turnage, he was the professor that took Natalie and I to Israel and going on the Sea of Galilee and going to all different places throughout Israel. And what a privilege that was. And Mark wrote a book, Professor Turnage wrote a book called Windows into the Bible. And he writes, everybody knows about the inn and the stable, the longstanding elements of Christmas pageants and wonderful kid nativities, right? You remember being the star, right? Wearing that awkward thing on your head or putting on your father's bathrobe, right? And singing a couple of songs and doing all of these things. And we equate that with our Christian tradition. And we believe these elements are part of the story. Yet, Mark Turnage says, I find when I guide people through the Holy Land, when I take them through Israel, and I challenge them to read Luke's account with a new set of eyes and look at the birth of Jesus, many are shocked to find those traditional elements appear nowhere in the scriptural text. This same Turnage, as I shared, was the one that guided Natalie and I through the Holy Land. And the best translation of Luke 2:6-7, we use the English Standard Version this evening, and one of the things I want to highlight there is that, and if you'll just click on that screen one more time for me, is we put guest room. Now, if you look in your notes, in your ESV Bibles, you can go to Bible Gateway even right now if you want. I don't recommend that. Parents are like, no, don't go to your smartphone. Okay, but if you highlight over that note, it says not only in, but it says guest room. And so, and while they were there, the time came for her to be delivered, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because they did not have space in their accommodations. That guest room could also be used the word accommodations. Now, I am not great on pronouncing Greek, okay? So if I have any Greek scholars in the room, Pastor Bill, don't come after me, all right? That Greek word is katalumatai, and this Greek word means accommodations or guest room. And so Luke uses the same word again when Jesus says, I'd like to have an upper room to have the Passover, right? So he says, could you prepare a katalumatai? Now, Luke, who wrote the book here that we're talking about, right, and speaks of the nativity, he will use the word in, but he will use that word when he's talking about the Good Samaritan. We're all familiar with the Good Samaritan, right? The Good Samaritan brings the injured man to the inn, and that word is pandoxion, inn. And he uses that word specifically to a place, a lodging place that is short-term to stay in, right? In the Septuagint, in the Old Testament, the same Greek word was described as God's katalumatai, his holy abode. Now, listen, I don't think God's holy abode was like temporary, right? Like, the holy in the heavens, that's my temporary house, right? No, it's a permanent place of residence, right? And so we can look at this and go, oh, wow, so Jesus didn't stay at a Holiday Inn, right?
He didn't stay at an inn where a kid is wearing this long beard that's falling off their chin during the nativity going, there's no room, sorry, right? And it's very cute, right? But again, when we look at the, just really dissect the text and look into that, we see this new understanding that we get that there was no space in their accommodation. Now, remember Luke's right, it happened that while they were there, the days for her to give birth were fulfilled. So in this understanding, it wasn't necessarily rushed, right? The days came for her fulfillment to have Jesus. But we a lot of times portray as like, oh, the donkey's rushing, right? He, not like Ukrainian or Russian, but he's moving, right, quickly. And he's like, we got to hit all the bumps. We got to get through this. We got to get to the inn, Holiday Inn. And I'm afraid they're not going to have room, so they're going to throw us out in the farm stable. Okay, no, right? It says that when the time came for her to have the baby, the time that was to be was fulfilled. And so, according to Luke, Joseph and Mary had been in Bethlehem for an undisclosed period of time prior to the birth of Jesus. And now, when they were going to give birth, their accommodations being unsuitable for the birth and the care of this newborn baby, so they did not have a place. They didn't have room in the place that they were staying. Remember when you were newly married, or remember as a single person, and you just go to crash at your friend's house? No big deal, right? You're just one person. Listen, if I took my tribe, okay, the six of us, and I go to crash at just a friend's house, I call them on the way, hey, you don't mind a baby and like six people and all. Sometimes the baby doesn't sleep, by the way. Can we crash at your house? Like, yes, if they were God-fearing, amazing people, they would say, yes, come on over. But they'd probably go, no, you know, Aunt Susie's thinking about coming over, and so we can't have you, right? So, you know, this aspect, right, of once your family starts increasing, it's a little bit harder to make room. Now, take this into the nativity account. The room that Mary and Joseph were staying in would have been a guest room. How Jewish homes are built is they have a, and I'll go into this in just a moment, but they have a cave-like area on the bottom where most of the animals go in and out. Then they have the place where most of the rooms are, and then sometimes they'll build a little guest house on top of the on top of the roof. And that would be okay if that was just one or two people hanging out up there. But if a baby was being born, how many ladies know you need a little space? Right? You need a little space. And so, and you need an environment where you've got that space. And so, Natalie and I learned in Israel that the traditional Jewish home had rooms for the family on the top floor, but the lower floor was where the animals lived. I'll give you an example. In the book of Judges, chapter 11, 30 to 40, Jephthah, he says, God, whatever comes out of the door of my house, and then his daughter comes out. I'm not going to explain that passage tonight, okay? He says, I'm going to sacrifice to the Lord, okay? We're not going there. But he really thought, because it was that cave area, that an animal was going to come out. Because that's where all the animals hung out. That's where he had all the animals that would come in and out. And so, and even when you study from a standpoint here of looking back at first century, you had Bethlehem and Nazareth had homes used that were natural caves as the back of the house, often keeping animals in the caves. So another interesting fact is that before the Middle Ages, Christians depicted Jesus being born where? In a cave. It wasn't until after those times that they wanted to make Jesus more European. And so they put him in a farm stable. But it wasn't until then that they actually depicted Jesus being born in a barn, right? Being born in that setting. And so in these archaeological finds, the living space of the family was separated from the animals by stone mangers. And listen, whatever manger we have, I think it's so cute all the nativity's done. I think they're so awesome. But we got to see these stone nativities. Stone mangers, I should say. And that's where Jesus was laid. He was laid in a piece of stone. I don't know about you, but I don't like sleeping on stone, okay? Now, I'm not saying it wasn't, you know, put hay in there, and again, the animals are there. But it's this aspect here that, you know, his accommodations are in that place. And so I want to show you guys, when I was in Israel, it's this 20-second clip, but we were in Israel and we went to a cave like what we're talking about. Now, liturgically, like the Catholic Church and more liturgical churches actually believe this is the very spot where Jesus was born. There's a star where you could kiss it. I didn't kiss it, okay? I'd really want to wipe that down with some sanitizer before I gave it a big kiss. I didn't do that. I was respectful, like, you know, but so I just want to show you that real quick. So let's take a look at that. I wanted to make sure you knew I was there. So, but again, it was a cave underneath. They built a church on top of this site where they believed that Jesus was born. And so we see here, this stuff is based on deep study of Israel. No pun intended, it's deep, right, a cave. All right, but Mary and Joseph stayed in a small guest room that couldn't hold a baby, and so they went down to the cave of the house and had Jesus there. We forget that Joseph and Mary wouldn't be alone. Joseph's family was in Bethlehem, and even more so because of the census. And so it looks different than our post-European artistry, the manger and the wonderful Christmas pageants that we've participated in and we've seen, than maybe the first century world. But my closing point is this. You know, Pastor John, what's the take-home point this Christmas Eve? If Joseph's family made room for Jesus with all the busyness of family and census keeping, can't we make room for Jesus in our hearts? That stony manger that doesn't look very comfortable and is rock hard, that stone manger seems a little bit less comfy and less cozy. It may make it feel less farm-like and more first century Jew, but let us remember that Jesus left the comforts of heaven, amen? He left the comforts of heaven to be placed in a rock-hard stone manger. He's the rock upon which we stand. And in that lowly place, literally and figuratively, he comes to the cave of our hearts, the deep recesses of our soul, and he comes to bring light into the dark world. And I'm reminded here, if you guys will, I want to close with this passage. And you, this is Zechariah speaking, and he says, and you will be called, and he's speaking to his son John, you'll be called the prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the Lord to prepare his way, to give knowledge of salvation to his people in the forgiveness of their sin because of the tender mercy of our God. And then get this analogy of this light breaking forth. Soon we're going to light our candles, and we're going to sing together as we close together. But he says this, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death to guide our feet into the way of peace. That he's come to guide you and me from the darkness of sin, from the places that's so deep. He's called us and he's taken us out and he's taken us to a place of peace. And last but not least, I want to share with you, let's remember the persecuted church. You know, in China, they've now closed all the mega churches that were registered churches in all of China. They've actually made it a law that if they see any Chinese child up to teenager in any form of Christian church, they will be prosecuted. Because they don't want children, like we have children right here, they don't want children hearing the word of God.